Hello, and welcome to In Conversation With, a podcast from the Lancet Infectious Diseases. It's May 2022, and I'm Cathal McQuillan. This month, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Hugh Adler, who currently works at the Department of Clinical Sciences, Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine, whose new retrospective observational study on clinical features and management of human monkeypox in the UK has been published online on thelancet.com. Hi, Hugh. Thanks so much for joining us on the podcast today. It's a real pleasure to chat to you.
Hi, Cathal. Thanks very much for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Would you mind giving me a brief background of monkeypox and its typical burden, and what treatments are there currently available?
Sure. So monkeypox is a viral zoonosis which is endemic in West and Central Africa and still causes many cases every year. We're currently seeing hundreds, if not thousands, of cases of monkeypox across Western Central Africa, including particularly Nigeria and the Democratic Republic of the Congo. It was first identified in monkeys in the 1950s, but actually they really should have given it a better name because it does not typically affect monkeys, and monkeys are certainly not the reservoir host. It's more likely to be found in small rodents, giant pouched rats and rope squirrels and so on, and that's likely the reservoir of the virus. When monkeypox infects humans, it causes fever and a rash. The rash is a vesicular rash, which can look similar to smallpox because smallpox and monkeypox are quite closely related as orthopox viruses. The rash can also be mistaken for chickenpox, but the rash with monkeypox, the vesicles or the small blisters are a bit larger and a bit firmer. They're often present on the palms and soles, which you don't see in chickenpox. And they're typically all at a similar stage at the same time, whereas with chickenpox, you will see both active and crusted lesions at the same time. A big clinical distinguishing factor between monkeypox and both smallpox and chickenpox is that in patients with monkeypox, they often have enlarged lymph nodes, and that's a really useful clinical diagnostic feature. It's typically a mild illness, although the rash can be painful or itchy. But we do know that severe disease can happen in the very young, in pregnant women, and in people living with HIV. There are two clades of the virus circulating. The Congo Basin clade is believed to be associated with higher mortality, while the West African clade, responsible for recent large outbreaks in Nigeria, is associated with a much lower mortality, probably 1% or less.
And are there any treatments kind of available out there at the moment?
So there are no treatments licensed for monkeypox, and there's never been any reports of treatment or clinical trials, but there are some drugs which have been developed with smallpox in mind in case there was a deliberate release or bioterrorism event. And these drugs are predicted to have activity against monkeypox, and indeed they were trialed on animals with monkeypox as part of the licensing process, and these are the drugs we talk about in our study.
Could you explain what new information your study provides and what were your findings exactly?
So this is a retrospective study of patients diagnosed with monkeypox in the UK. It was a collaborative project across what's called the High Consequence Infectious Diseases Network, or HCID networks, which is five specialist hospitals across the UK National Health Service who are specially commissioned to manage and treat high consequence infectious diseases such as hemorrhagic fevers, MERS-CoV, but also monkeypox. And so any patient in the UK diagnosed with monkeypox would be transferred to one of the HCID centres. And the paper is observational research only. It's data that was collected during the course of routine clinical care, and we're really grateful to the patients for providing consent for their anonymous data to be shared so we can learn more about this infection. And it was really a collaborative process. Anytime a patient with monkeypox is managed in one of these centres, we have group discussions with the other hospitals, and share expertise and share experience, and we're able to access new treatments. So what we found is that since the HCID network was established in 2018, there have been seven patients diagnosed with monkeypox in the UK. We were interested to see the evidence of transmission. So there was transmission to a healthcare worker and also transmission within a family to from one parent to a child and subsequently the other parent. And so the main findings probably divided into three headings. There's the clinical course of disease, there's the laboratory tests and treatments. So we found that these cases were mild, as predicted with the West African variant. We didn't see anyone admitted to intensive care. We didn't see any deaths, and that's really reassuring. We did see some unusual clinical features, though. We saw some patients had large ulcerated lesions, much bigger than a typical monkeypox lesion. These lesions continued to test positive for monkeypox virus and were quite slow to heal, which prolonged the patient's hospitalization. We noticed one patient had a deep abscess, which required radiological drainage, and this abscess was positive for monkeypox virus at very high titers and negative for bacteria, so possibly a direct toxicity of monkeypox virus. That's not been seen before. And we noticed low mood in a lot of our patients, and I think that really must be can't be overstated, because prolonged isolation in high consequence ID isolation units, cared for by staff in full PPE, it can be quite stigmatizing and it can be quite frightening. And I think it's not surprising these patients all really suffered psychologically from this, and that's also been reported in other case series from Nigeria. In terms of the laboratory monitoring, we were fortunate that we could perform serial PCR testing for monkeypox virus, not just in skin swabs, but in blood and urine and in throat swabs. This was done by the National Rare and Imported Pathogens Laboratory, run by the UK Health Security Agency, and so all tests from all the HCID centres went there. And longitudinal sampling hasn't been done in patients with monkeypox before. We did it as part of routine care, and because having not managed the infection before, we didn't know what to expect. And we were surprised to see monkeypox PCR positivity in blood for an extended period of time, and particularly in throat swabs, long after the rash resolved. Some of our patients still tested positive for monkeypox PCR in a throat swab, and this prolonged their hospitalization. We don't know the implications of this, and it's important to say we haven't demonstrated these patients remained infectious or that they were infectious from throat swab alone, but it's an important area for future research to inform infection control and isolation policies. And then finally, regarding treatment, we were able to access brincidofovir, which is an oral DNA polymerase inhibitor with broad sort of activity against most DNA viruses, including orthopox viruses, which has been proposed and licensed based on animal data as a potential standby treatment for smallpox if smallpox were to be deliberately released. And we didn't, in the three patients who were offered brincidofovir as part of routine care, we didn't notice any improvement in their clinical condition. They didn't get better any faster than would be expected, and their viral loads in blood and throat didn't appear to improve based on the drug, but they did develop deranged liver function tests, and liver inflammation is a recognized side effect of brincidofovir. Then there's a new drug, tecovirimat, which was specifically developed to be an anti-orthopox virus drug, again on standby in case of smallpox. And this was licensed based on efficacy against monkeypox in animals and good tolerability and good bioavailability in humans. And we were able to access that for one patient, and she had quite a dramatic response. Her rash got better much quicker. She got better much quicker. Viral PCR in blood and throat went negative right away, and she had a much shorter duration of hospitalization. She was in for about 10 days, whereas most other patients were in for several weeks. And so it's only one case, and I don't want to claim more than I can based on one non-randomized, unmatched, non-controlled, not prospective case, but it's a pretty dramatic signal in terms of the clinical and virological response. It's in keeping with the preclinical data, and it's supportive of further studies for tecovirimat and making it available to more patients with monkeypox. And so that was quite an exciting finding.
That's great. Yeah, no, that is that's very promising, and hopefully there'll be more research into it to clarify it. So monkeypox is obviously very topical right now. There's currently an ongoing outbreak in the UK with 57 confirmed cases, and outbreaks in multiple European countries, the USA, Canada, and Australia. How do you think your study could help to inform decision-making for these outbreaks?
So we published this case series with the hope that it would inform clinicians looking after cases of monkeypox, both in disease-endemic countries and also if and when more cases were imported. And we really didn't anticipate that we'd be publishing it just at the time that there was a large outbreak in the UK and Europe. We hope that our findings regarding treatment can be informative to clinicians, and that patients who need treatment can access these drugs we described, perhaps on a compassionate use basis, like the way we did, and that we can get more data supportive, for example, of tecovirimat, both in patients at risk of severe disease or with complications. But ultimately, it would be nice if we could treat lots more cases of monkeypox with this agent, because it appears to be safe and effective. Our findings regarding the viral loads in blood and throat need confirmation, but particularly need further studies, for example, with viral culture instead of just PCR testing, so we can see if this truly is infectious virus and if PCR testing should be, for example, used to define when a patient can come out of isolation. But our study can't answer that question yet, but we hope that clinicians looking after patients with monkeypox in other countries can be aware of these findings, and also using viral load monitoring in blood, for example, might help inform the clinical course of a patient or the response to any treatment. These are speculative outcomes at present. And also our findings regarding the psychological impact of monkeypox and the predicted clinical course. Hopefully when a patient is admitted with monkeypox, clinicians, even if they haven't seen a case of monkeypox before, will be a bit more prepared and be able to explain to the patient what they might expect.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I believe the incubation time, or at least the isolation period that close contacts have been given, is around 3 weeks, which especially after most of our experiences with isolation periods of COVID, we're well aware of how difficult that is, and 3 weeks is a long time.
Absolutely. And that's 3 weeks at home is hard. 3 weeks in hospital with an infection being cared for in PPE is even harder. And some of our patients spent even longer than 3 weeks. Since we found how mild the illness tends to be, it would be great if patients didn't have to be hospitalized for infection control purposes alone. And indeed, many of our cases early in our clinical experience were hospitalized for a long time because we weren't sure how long they'd be infectious. And it would be great if patients could be facilitated to safely self-isolate at home, which we've learned from COVID can be done.
Absolutely. So something I've seen discussed a lot in the news lately regards to the outbreak is the purchasing of smallpox vaccines, which have no proven efficacy after infection, but are suggested to possibly reduce its severity. What are your thoughts on this approach? And do you think that antivirals should be a greater focus?
I think prevention is always better than cure. So ring vaccination of contacts with smallpox vaccine, if the contacts are high risk enough contacts, that was previously deployed in the cases we describe. So it's not a new strategy, and it does appear to be very effective as long as the vaccine is given early enough. So I think antivirals for confirmed cases need more research, but I hope can be made more available. But smallpox vaccine for contacts is a really useful weapon in our public health armamentarium, and I hope that enough vaccine can be made available to the people that need it.
So apart from an outbreak in 2003 in the USA, which was linked to important rodents, infections have been relatively confined to remote locations in Central and West Africa. With the continuation of large-scale deforestation and urban sprawl, both known to increase transmission of zoonotic diseases from animals to humans, do you see more monkeypox outbreaks in the future?
I think that's inevitable for precisely the reasons you describe. Human populations are expanding. This is due to issues with population size, but also climate change, climate refugees, and people displaced by conflict. And so we're moving into new habitats and coming into more contact with animals more frequently. And this is combined with increased global connectivity, and especially post-COVID, people traveling more. So we always knew that more cases of monkeypox would continue to be exported, but also monkeypox will remain enzootic and endemic in Western Central Africa. And until we make treatments available, potentially make even vaccines available, there is, for example, a trial of smallpox vaccine in healthcare workers in the DRC currently recruiting to see if nosocomial spread can be reduced through that route. Unless we tackle that root cause, it's absolutely inevitable that more outbreaks will occur, both in those highly affected countries, but also that monkeypox cases associated with travel will continue to be seen. The other factor possibly related to the resurgence is down to smallpox immunity, because monkeypox cases were relatively rare and poorly transmissible during the era when smallpox vaccination was universal. And now that is no longer the case, and population herd immunity against smallpox is much lower, the potential for monkeypox to spread and to have human-to-human chains of transmission is increased.
So in the US outbreak in 2003, no human-to-human transmissions were reported. All infections were linked to those infected animals. However, with this outbreak, we're already seeing reports of probable human-to-human transmission. What are your thoughts on this? And could it potentially be a more transmissible variant to the one seen in 2003 and in your study?
That's a really interesting question. There were some cases in the US outbreak where they couldn't completely exclude person-to-person transmission, but since there was also an animal in the household, it was felt that animal transmission was more likely. Quite a few of the adults in the US study had had previous smallpox vaccine exposure as well, so there was a bit of immunity there in the background. In our study, our observational study in the UK, we did identify person-to-person transmission, both to a healthcare worker, which occurred before a patient was diagnosed or suspected to have monkeypox, and therefore PPE protocols weren't taken, and also extended transmission within a family household. And as you say, during the current outbreak, we're seeing chains of person-to-person transmission, but that has been reported before and is well recognized with both the West African and the Congo Basin clade of monkeypox. And it's reassuring to know that monkeypox, being a DNA virus, mutates and evolves much more slowly than an RNA virus like COVID, HIV, Hep C, an example you want to give. So we wouldn't expect monkeypox to evolve and rapidly change its properties. There is some preliminary genomic evidence that's been published that suggests that the strain of monkeypox virus in the current outbreak is similar to that seen in our previous exported cases and in the West African outbreak in 2018. And no major mutations have been identified, although this research is hot off the press and needs confirmation.
What is next in line for your research?
For our research, most of all of my collaborators on the paper are still part of the High Consequence Infectious Diseases Network, and therefore their current priority is managing the current outbreak and looking after the current patients. And building on our experience with antivirals to hopefully make antivirals available to patients with particular need. And in our paper, we call for more prospective studies of patients with monkeypox, and monkeypox in a high-income setting is a good opportunity to do this in order that we can refine our understanding of the biology of the disease and also the performance of these therapies we talked about. There are ongoing studies needed to clarify our finding regarding the virus PCR positivity in throat swabs. Can we culture live virus from these samples, or is it like a COVID test that can remain positive for weeks or months after your infection is resolved and after you are no longer infectious? That's a really important question to nail down. And then finally, monkeypox remains endemic in Western Central Africa, and that's where these treatments are really sorely needed. And so I'm pleased that there is a prospective trial ongoing in the Central African Republic where tecovirimat, the drug that we saw a promising signal from, that's now being made available in the CAR to patients with monkeypox, and not in a randomized way, but in a structured prospective observational study that is collecting a lot of really valuable data, and that'll support these drugs being made more widely available to the populations where they're needed.
That's great. Yeah, that's really interesting to know. Well, thanks again to you. It's been a real pleasure talking to you, and thanks again for taking the time to speak with us.
Well, thank you, Kyle. It's really exciting to have the paper published, and it's great to share this new knowledge.
You can read Dr. Adler's research online now at thelancet.com. Thank you to Dr. Adler, and thank you for listening to this episode of In Conversation With. Remember, you can subscribe to In Conversation With The Lancet Infectious Diseases wherever you usually get your podcasts.